Did he resent the rich?
I don't think so at all. I don't get that feeling. Emotionally, I don't get that feeling. He wrote in one journal that he felt sorry for the rich. And he goes into it in depth in a very human way. First of all, he says they tend to be lonely because the only people that surround the rich are people who want their money. So they don't really have any true friends. They don't have true friendships. It's really hard to find people you can trust. They're not after you for something. So he says the rich are the loneliest people in the world. He's talking in a very deep sense. They might be surrounded by an entourage, but does anyone really love them for who they are? He said it's much easier to be loved when you're not rich. People see exactly who you are, what your qualities are, what your human traits are. You can't hide them. No camouflage. So he always felt bad, actually. He felt sorry for the rich. He said that they were just the loneliest people he knew. And he also felt that they could be educated. That was another aspect of like, okay, so you're rich. Oh, it happens. Born rich or get rich or whatever. He wasn't anti-rich, but he thought that circulating your wealth was a very good idea. This idea, again, going back to Jesus. Even if you are rich, there's things you can do to get to heaven. There are actually practices that you can follow and still get to heaven. It's okay.
You could be forgiven for being rich.
Forgiven wasn't even in his consciousness. It's right. Like, well, if you're poor, you can get to heaven. If you're rich, you can get to heaven.
Right.
It's all circumstances. I think he was very non-judgmental for the most part. These were all circumstances. You know, wealthy people inherit money. They come in as little babies. You know, they're little naked little 7-pound things. What do they know about anything? They didn't create anything. Sometimes they're born into this as well. And they're born into wealth. So that's a circumstance as valid as being born into anything. That's through Woody's eyes. So he wasn't judgmental about that at all. It's just what you do with your circumstance that really chisels your soul and tells us who you are as a human being.
As he grew older and into his last 10, 15 years of his life, did he accumulate any wealth at all?
No, he really didn't. My parents didn't make enough money to even have Social Security taken out of their paycheck. My dad, for most of his life, played for nickels and dimes. And in the Woody Guthrie archives, we have many, many receipts from all the gigs that he did. You have to go back in time and imagine where he sang, who his audience was. Unions, workers, he would go out in the fields, sing for free for migrant workers. That's where he wrote a lot of his material in the West Coast when he went to California. He came to the East Coast and was educated about union politics and some other things. So he would sing at boycotts and picket lines and any kind of gathering that was usually a fundraiser for somebody else. And when you look at the receipts or in his diaries, he says, yeah, I got paid $5 last night to sing here, and I got paid $10 last night. Leadbelly and I did a gig, and we got paid $7.50 each. Leadbelly got paid $7.50 to sing in front of a group of people. He was never interested in money, although I have to say he had a number of opportunities throughout his life to become a major star and make a lot of money. When he first went to Los Angeles, he had a radio show, and he was a tremendous hit because all the Okies had come to California. So he had the biggest audience in Los Angeles. He had 150,000 Okies that were displaced. They all listened to his program. He got 10,000 letters a week in fan mail. They were upping his salary, you know, saying, oh, let's make your show longer. You can write hit songs, etc. And the same thing happened in New York. When he came to New York, he had very, very successful radio shows. They were paying him more than $350 a week when he came to New York on his first radio show, which is like thousands of dollars now, that you would be getting $4,000, $5,000 a week. When he first got the gig, he was giddy. And he even said, he wrote to Alan Lomax, he says, they're giving me money so fast, I have to sleep under it. He didn't know what to do with it, so much cash flying around. What happened in every single circumstance was the more popular he got, the more censorship he encountered. So the more people that were listening to his shows, then the producers would come in, or the radio heads, and their sponsors would come in and say, man, you're great. You're the coolest hillbilly this side of the Mississippi. And they'd throw money at him, and they'd say, but tone it down on some of those songs. Would he tone it down? That's how they said it then. He got really upset about that. He had a short fuse at times. He had been living on his own for so long, doing things his way, that the idea of someone telling him how to do a radio show or what songs to sing, he didn't take to it. And he had a short fuse, and he would walk out of the studio, even without notice. He'd just say, this isn't for me. I'm not doing this. And he did that over and over and over again. So, again, I want to point out that it wasn't that he was against success. It wasn't that he was even against making money. I think the point is he didn't want anyone telling him what to do and what songs to sing.
I can't only say but how admirable. He had to do it his way. A lot of people would have sold out.
Yeah, and that goes back to what we're talking about with his mother. It's like selling your mother out. It's so close to him. That's what I mean. It's not an intellectual idea. It's not like he read something somewhere that convinced him that this is a good idea. This is right in his heart. This is what makes him cry. This is what makes him laugh. This is his parents. It would be as if someone was saying, don't sing me a sad song about your mom. Sing me a happy tune.